remain standing for the reading of the Gospel. Matthew's Gospel, the 5th chapter. We continue our work in the Sermon on the Mount, beginning at the 21st verse. You've heard that we said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment." But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you'll be liable to the council. And if you say, "You fool," you'll be liable to the hell of fire. So when you're offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and you'll be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you've paid the last penny. You've heard that it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, "Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you've heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you've made to the Lord." But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it's the throne of God, or by the earth, for it's God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Please be seated. Our children may go to children's worship. After the passage I just read, I'm surprised more of you didn't get up and run out. Just some random thoughts to start with. At my house, we have developed a breakfast ritual. While I'm scrambling the eggs, Mary Helen is fixing the toast. Ancient law said that if she burned the toast, that I could divorce her. Apparently, ancient law assumed that my eggs would always be fluffy and golden. That wailing smoke detector is just overly sensitive. Another random thought, nurse colleague and I left Children's Hospital one beautiful spring day, going over to a nearby doctor's office to be with a family during a difficult visit. That day brought a lot of people outdoors, including a group of Amish men who were sitting on the steps of Children's Hospital watching people go by, and their manner of dress set them off as different. And most of the people outside then were young women, and their manner of dress was quite different from Amish women. And I made the naive comment to the nurse, "I wonder what the Amish men are thinking," to which she replied with some conviction, "Oh, I can tell you what they're thinking." Another time, Children's Hospital, a single mom staying at the hospital with her critically ill child, kept getting Facebook messages every night from critical family members, bullying her, chastising her, belittling her. It just destroyed her. And everyone who worked with her, chaplains, social worker, nurses, doctors, begged her to stop looking at Facebook, to stop allowing people to bully her. But every night, alone in a hospital room, with the sounds of those critical care machines, she would turn to Facebook, hoping for some word of encouragement that never came. And every day, we would be dealing with one more verbal wound. When I read this passage at Friday church, I tried to look up at them every now and then. When I looked up at one point, I saw these horrified looks on their faces. And I thought the best thing I can do is stop. And so I did. I stopped reading it. I said, let me just talk about it a little bit. Who needs a religion that preaches self-inflicted bodily harm? Our literalism distorts faith and life. Matthew's gospel is continuing this business of defining righteousness to be more than what the religious elite do. And here he uses a formula. The formula is, you've heard it said, but I say. Jesus tightens the standards of behavior to include attitudes and belief about ourselves and our place in the world and about the other people we share this planet with. He starts with murder and anger and insults and name-calling with terrible results from judgment to hell itself. I read that and I thought, we live in angry times. We live with a daily invitation to be outraged, and there's much to be outraged about. The first readers of Matthew's gospel had reason to be outraged. They lived under foreign domination, and for that privilege of being dominated, they got to pay for it. They surely had to live with a great deal of resentment. Surely they marinated in that resentment and that hatred. And there are some days I feel like I marinate in those same juices. Hear the words single out, anger with siblings, brother and sister. Those closest to us who can call out the deepest of feelings in them. They know where the buttons are. Some of them help put them there. But simmering anger becomes the cesspool of the soul, sickening everyone. And to be sure, anger by itself is a gift. It animates our desire to protect. It energizes our calls for justice. It stops the wounding of innocence, and we protect ourselves with it. We draw a line and say, don't cross this. You don't get to treat me this way. People pushed to the back of the bus have a right to be angry. People judged harshly and condemned for those they love have a right to be angry. People who do not get justice at their work or in their culture or even in their families have a right to be angry. And yet, we cannot live there long term. Here we're told we're in relationships and we need to value the relationships. Insults and name calling, which all of us do, or at least think, do not heal that relationship. Here Jesus encourages our purpose. He encourages our identity as a people of healing. And he calls us to be mindful of our words and to be in control of our words. It's the rare person who says they cannot be hurt by words. We need the words of encouragement and affirmation and love, and too often get the words of condemnation and hatred. Jesus tells us to control our words. In a hospice visit, and we didn't always do hospice visits where they're always so serious and somebody said something earth-shattering. Oftentimes with children, they were playful visits. We invited them to enjoy their time. And the social worker and I had worked out this thing where it was perfectly okay to make funny comments about my baldness. I didn't say it was okay with you. And we did that. We were playful with the children, and there was this time with a 16-year-old who was critically ill in her own home, and I made some comment, I can't think exactly what I said, but it clearly invited her to make a wisecrack about my lack of hair. And what she said was, I would not want to say anything that might make you feel badly about yourself. It's really something when the 16-year-olds are more mature than the chaplain who attends to them. Jesus invites us to take control over our words as a first step in the healing of relationships. He said it's best not to go to church until you address the broken relationships. I recently conducted a funeral, and this is public knowledge, or I wouldn't say so. It was public knowledge that he'd been through a painful divorce. It was also known that he and his wife worked at rebuilding the relationship, not at remarrying, but at becoming best friends and supporting each other through some very difficult times and very terrible losses. And the building of that new relationship required forgiveness and understanding, a vision of possibilities, and courage. Jesus names a sensitive, painful place as the very place to practice our faith, to practice love. There's no promise that your brother or sister or your ex will do the same. Just the call to take responsibility for our side. He goes on to this next, you have heard, but I say, and he equates adultery and lust, and it makes us all uncomfortable. But it's written as if he's speaking to men. I think Jesus is challenging us about how we see people. If we see people in only one dimension, we fail to see them, and the great temptation is to relate to them in destructive ways. We lived in Missouri, the local hospital. It wasn't much of a hospital when we first went there, but it grew and it grew and it increased in its expertise and finally became the Phelps County Regional Medical Center. It may have a new name. It's even larger now. But one man, Dr. Kirk Boyinga, started a stress center, their rehab unit. And occasionally, because I knew him, he would invite me to come and speak about stress and spirituality. Rolla was a small town. I didn't know everybody by name, but I knew a lot of people by just seeing them. Rarely did I see somebody I knew or somebody who even looked familiar to me at that place. I would always sit and survey the group, just kind of looking around to kind of get a sense of this audience. And one day, I looked, and there's this young woman whose physical beauty was just striking. And I would learn that from the time she started to develop as a teenage girl, that everybody started relating to her beauty and not to her. And they didn't know about her wounds. They didn't know about her loneliness. They didn't know about her questions. They didn't know about her dreams. They didn't know her. And so by her mid-20s, she has an empty place in here that she tried to fill up with pills and drugs and alcohol. When we only see someone as the men in her life saw her, we harm them. We wound them. Adultery destroys relationships, but so does lust. So does relating to somebody only because of their skin. Our refusal to see another's full humanity and an inward plotting to use them for our own ends is evil. The question is, when we look at someone, do we really see them? And maybe the question is, what are we looking for? And then there are these grotesque statements about your eye, and if it offends you, you should pluck it out and throw it away or cut off your hand. And please don't do that. It is exaggerated speech to make a point typical of the Middle East. It's telling us that spiritual discipline and growth can be difficult, that there are ways that we do life that need to be left behind. And that we need to go forward in a positive and loving way that truly sees people. Change the way we see. Change the way we touch. Then there's this next, it has been said, but I say, and it's related to this one. It's about the treatment of women who were considered property of the father and then of the husband. And her sole job was to please whichever man owned her at the time. And men controlled. She could be dismissed for anything, including the burning of the toast. Men held the right to divorce. Women might as well have had a slave chattel hung on their necks. This way of seeing women as property is flawed and destructive, and I know that you know that, and you don't need me to remind you. But remember the theme of the Sermon on the Mount is accept your righteousness, your sense of justice, exceed that of the religious elite. He's saying to us, let go of male privilege. Lean into love, a love that works at healing relationships. It's the same kind of thing that said to Joseph at the beginning of Matthew's gospel when he finds that Mary's pregnant. Righteousness required her dismissal. Publicly or privately, either way, she would be at great risk. But the Spirit says in the dream, don't be afraid. Lean into love. Lean into this great adventure of love. Love requires more than just the law. And this next, it's been said, but I say to you, is don't swear. Move beyond the oath-taking. No need to swear on your mother's grave. Be the person who speaks truth. Be the person whose word can be depended upon. Do you want your doctor to lie to you? Want your minister to lie to you? Want your politicians to lie to you? Oh, I'm sorry. No great imagination is required to see the harm done by those who swear an oath and do not keep it. We cannot be a people of lies. What's the point of all this? Because Jesus seems to take the law and ratchet it up some to where it seems impossible. But the underlying thing is to say, remember, you have distorted the law because you've forgotten its purpose. Its purpose is to guide us in relationship with God and with others. Its purpose is to help us in loving, and we've forgotten that. And so I'm reminding you that in the painful times, love. I'm reminding you to live by respect and by truth. I'm reminding you to see others as God sees them. I'm reminding you to be the people of God who are a people of healing and integrity. It invites us to the realm of God's love. Amen.